Kansas City's new task force on violence is up and rolling as it confronts the knotty question of just why there's so much violence in this town. Of course, the answers range from poverty to the ongoing prevalence of so much crime on the city's east side that the habit is sometimes passed on from parents to kids. The committee's work begins as Kansas City is experiencing yet another spike in homicides in recent weeks that has a lot of people shaking their heads. With us today to talk about the work of this important new 19-member task force are Councilwoman Jolie Justice, who heads the task force. Councilwoman, it's always nice to have you. Welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
Wick Thomas is a teen librarian at the Plaza Library, and he's also a task force member. Wick, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
The Reverend Tina Harris is also here. She's pastor of Grand Avenue Temple United Methodist Church. That's at 9th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. She's also a task force member. Tina, welcome to you, too.
Glad to be here.
Well, Pastor Harris, let me just begin with you. How concerned is this community? How concerned is your congregation, for that matter, about this latest spike in homicides and assault? What are you hearing?
Steve, this is incredibly important to everyone.
Yeah.
We are tired of seeing the yellow tape wrapped around various areas and hearing the cries of the mothers who've lost their children. I think that what I'm concerned about, that there are parts of this community that are incredibly concerned about this, but then there are other parts that are on the brink of apathy. And so I think that this task force work is going to be incredibly important as we remind people that there's something that we can do.
Well, maybe it's obvious which parts of town are concerned, which parts of town aren't paying much attention.
Well, see, I don't know exactly the parts of, maybe it's the people, because, for instance, in my congregation, we are incredibly diverse. We've got folks who sleep on the streets sitting right next as folks who sleep in the suburbs. And so all of our folks are very concerned about every single person. I know that there are maybe some parts of town that might forget that this impacts all of us. And it's not just something that happens in downtown area or on the east side, that it is something that for all of us to be concerned about.
Wick, in the circles that you run in, how much concern, how much worry, how much angst are you hearing about all this?
Well, I think among my peer group, it's just a common knowledge that this violence is a serious issue. So I think that from what I see, like most of the people in my peer group know that this is something that needs to be addressed. I work mostly with teenagers, from Kansas City, Missouri, and there's not a single one of them that wouldn't know this was an issue.
Are they resigned to it, Wick, or are they concerned about it, or is it a little bit of both?
Well, I mean, I think they're definitely concerned about it. I have a teen leadership group who I actually like consulted before I even said yes to joining this task force, because I see this as a way to get their voices heard on a larger scale, like in the city government. So I do think that they internalize a lot of that apathy, you know, that is thrust upon them from the community, though.
Yeah. You know, Jolie, after all the attention to this issue over the years, all the work, you know, all the time spent on it, is there something discouraging about this recent rash of violence?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm discouraged every time a homicide takes place in Kansas City, Missouri. And it is discouraging to see this, I guess, you know, peak at this point, because it looked like for so long that we were actually tackling some of the issues and that the numbers were coming down. But it became very clear very quickly that as we saw the numbers go up, not just in Kansas City, but across the country, that we needed to double down and work even harder on the issue.
Mm-hmm. And what are you hearing out there from your constituents about what's going on in town? Do you represent the part of town that maybe isn't as concerned about this or not?
Well, and you know, Tina actually hit it on the head. I think there are pockets of apathy and folks who have not been affected by violence yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key word, yet, because frankly, everybody that is on the task force, everybody who came to our first meeting, everybody had a personal story of why they were there and why they wanted to work on this issue. The reality is that this affects our entire city. It affects the health of our city. It affects the health of our children. And ultimately, if this is how you want to look at it, it affects our city's bottom line and our ability to continue to grow. And so this is something that we all need to be looking at. And I'm excited that we have a diverse group of citizens who are willing to sit down and spend the time on it.
You know, you've clearly got your work cut out for you here, and I'm wondering, your charge here is to do what?
Our charge here, and I'll tell you, back it up just a minute. When the mayor asked me if I would be willing to facilitate this group of citizens, he asked me who I thought should be on the panel. And I didn't give him specific names to begin with. I gave him types of folks. I said, you know, police officers and prosecutors and ATF agents and all of these sorts of things. And he handed it back to me and he said, those are subject matter experts. I want you to find citizens. I want you to find a fresh set of eyes.
Why citizens? Why not experts?
Well, and I think part of it is because we need to make sure this is part of our community conversation. we have a lot of community conversations about a lot of tough issues. We have not necessarily had a community conversation that goes across the entire metro area about the issue of violence. And so he was very adamant that we would have plenty of subject matter experts who would come in and give us what's happening now, but that he wanted a fresh set of eyes to look at this so we start to have that community dialogue. And then what our charge is there... Are there pragmatic solutions that we can propose? Not another report. I have specifically said we are not doing a report. I am tired. I was in Jefferson City for 8 years, as you know, and we produced a lot of reports that are collecting dust out there.
And there have been reports done on this exact topic over the years, and what's happened to those?
Absolutely. And so one of the things that has happened with those is we have forwarded it on to the task force members, and we're going to ask the folks who have worked on those to come in and explain, okay, you did this report, you made these recommendations. What were the barriers to implementing those recommendations? If we have a fresh set of eyes looking at this in a holistic manner, we're going to be able to start to see the trends of where there have been problems and what hasn't happened. So if at the end of this we can come up with 2, 3, 5, 10 recommendations and we're able to implement those and make incremental change, I think it will be time well spent.
You know, Reverend Harris, you know, a cynic might look at what you're doing and say that the problems that you're taking, the problem you're taking on here is so intractable. It's so complicated. It's so deeply woven into the fabric of certain segments of our community that any one committee trying to take a shot at this is ultimately going to fall short.
I would respond to them and say there's always hope.
Mm-hmm.
There's always hope. And that is our most important work to do. Just because something has been tried before doesn't mean that we can't try again and mm-hmm. look at it with what Jolie said, with fresh set of eyes, and look at it with creative problem solving and with the hope that we can actually make a difference in some way. And so I think the other alternative is to do nothing. And there's no way in the world that we can go through this life and do nothing. And mm-hmm. so I think we have to try.
You know, if you come out of this experience, Councilwoman Justice, and your recommendations call for the spending of money to deal with one problem or another, maybe it's more police officers, maybe it's more aim for peace folks out on the streets, are there resources to begin to allocate to what you might come up with?
We're going to look for them. There's no doubt about that. I mean, one of the problems that you have heard us talk about in city and state government over the years is the dwindling dollars that are available either from the federal government or from the state government. And frankly, it's our nonprofit communities and our philanthropic communities who have stepped up and helped. They have helped fill the gap. If more money is one of the components that we need to address, then we will go out and look for those funds. And the reality is that we need to start to have conversations about how this issue needs to be discussed when we are talking about budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to also make sure that that's not the only thing that we're looking at. And one of the things that I'm going to ask the different organizations who come to talk to us about is if you could have a magic wand and you were able to do one thing to improve the lives of the groups that you are working with, whether you're a domestic violence shelter or a police department or a prosecutor, what would you need to help with your job as it relates to ending violence in our community? And the first answer you give us cannot be money. That's one of the things that I'd like to see. Some of the most creative solutions that have been presented are when you take the money off the table and say, tell us what we can do with what we have now.
Let's get our listeners to answer the question that Councilwoman Jolie Justice just posed. If our listeners could wave a magic wand to begin to address some of these issues, this would be a great time to call. We're looking for your ideas, your recommendations. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. We want to know what your ideas are for addressing this very, very difficult issue in our community. 816-235-2888. Wick, how much time do you have to get your work done? This anti-violence task force, what's your timetable?
Well, November is when we're going to be issuing the report from the discussions.
So you got like 10 months to go.
We do. I mean, we're actively working that whole time, though, is the idea. It's not hopeful. I mean, talking with Jolie and with everybody, I think we want it to be actively working, hearing from experts all and up until then, and then implementing what we can as we go as well. Like, we don't mm-hmm. want this to just be like, here's the report, goodbye. You know, mm-hmm. we want to be actively working on this. And I think we are already. I think we're seeing a lot of input from community members, especially since this is a citizens task force.
So do you want to get the report done at some point between now and November and then continue working on it after that point?
Well, I think the term of the task force, and Julie can probably help here, is through November. And so after that, there's no question in my mind that the task force members will stay engaged. And we've all been engaged in different ways, you know, in this already. And it's just nice to bring us all together to work on it in one cohesive place.
You've already had one meeting. Reverend, what happened at that meeting?
Well, there were a lot of emotions expressed, and all of the task force members explained why they were there and why they decided to participate, which was a wonderful thing to hear. But what I loved the most was seeing the number of people from the community, the number of folks from the public coming and really sharing what was on their hearts. It reminded me a little bit of a time of public lament. I mean, it was just people have gone through so many hard things. There were personal stories as well as neighborhood stories shared, and I really appreciated that. And I hope that we have an opportunity to hear more of those things through a variety of vehicles over the course of this year.
So a lot of pain, I guess, was expressed.
Of course,
hearing that right?
There was a lot of pain, but also a lot of frustration because we've tried doing something before, and we've had I don't even know what the number is as of today for the number of homicides in Kansas City. Is it 7
or 7, 8, 9, something like that? Yeah.
So and people are upset about it and frustrated about that. So we heard that, and I share in that frustration. So I was glad to hear that voiced.
To what extent, Councilman Justice, are you going to be looking around the country to see what best practices are in other cities that are very much dealing with the same issue?
That's a big component of what we're doing. One of the things that I'm excited about are the number of people who have reached out to us and offered their assistance. Not only city staff, which is fantastic, but we've had offers from the Kansas City Public Library, from UMKC, from others who said, we will go out and do the research and find for you best practices and bring them back, which is one of the things that I think is going to be an incredible resource.
Are you going to travel too?
It's not our intention at this point to travel. I mean, obviously, if we can get folks who are working successfully and bring their stories to Kansas City, if there's a reason for us to go and look at something on the ground, I'm sure we will figure out a way to do it. But right now, what we want to do is invite those good ideas into Kansas City. And the other thing we want to do is make sure that there is plenty of opportunity for folks here in Kansas City. I have had a huge number of people reach out and say, hey, I work in this one narrow area. How can I help? And the good thing is I think the thing that'll be a little different about this task force than other commissions is the volume of public input that we're going to take. We have a website set up. We have an email set up. We have an address and a telephone number. We heard during our first session that people wanted more opportunity to give public testimony. So we're already setting up public listening sessions on Saturdays across the community so that people can continue to come in and give those ideas. There are no ideas that are off the table at this point.
What's the arc of your committee's work? You began with some public airing of emotion, it sounds like. Where are you going? You're meeting monthly?
We are meeting monthly, and what we anticipate moving forward is that our monthly meetings will really be 2 hours each, and they will be filled with the subject matter experts coming and, frankly, educating the community. We had members of the community who said, I've heard that the issue of guns and gun laws and gun regulations are a big problem. So we had folks who said, you know what, I don't even know what the gun laws are. I have no idea what barriers we have. And so we have folks from the ATF, from the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office, the U.S. Attorney's Office, who want to come in and talk about how existing gun regulations are affecting the work that they're doing. So we will have subject matter testimony at every meeting. And then we will have, over the course of the entire time, multiple listening sessions for the public to come in and give their input, in addition to social media and to the website and to good old-fashioned letters. I had a handwritten letter that showed up at City Hall the other day. That is the type of input that we... It still happens.
It is
rare, but it happens. So those are the sorts of things that we hope people will engage in. And then to the extent that we can go out into the communities and go to our faith communities, go to neighborhood meetings, we will do that to get into the communities and make sure that everybody has the opportunity to weigh in, because I think that every idea right now helps us.
What's your website? Can you put it out?
Sure. So our website is www.kcmo.gov, and then it's /violence.
Okay.
So it's kcmo.gov/violence, and then our website, or I'm sorry, our email address is violencetaskforce@kcmo.org. And so those are the two ways, if you prefer to interface with us electronically. Those are the two best ways to get a hold of us.
Okay, and in the meantime, I want our listeners to chime in here with their best thoughts, best ideas. How concerned are you about this issue? What needs to be done? We have three members of the mayor's anti-violence task force right here in front of me. 816-235-2888. Let's go to some calls here and go to Darnell from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Well, pretty much from what I can see as a young black male in the community is that our people are becoming a carbon copy of what we see on TV and what we listen to as far as our choice of music. And a lot of that music is pretty much enticing us to commit these violent acts or to dress a certain way or to act a certain way or to believe a certain way. And a lot of images on TV portray us as criminals for the world to see. So when you have a young black person that grows up to that from you know, the moment that they watch TV all the way up until they commit a crime, I mean, that's where I think the whole interwoven comment that you guys were speaking about earlier.
That's really an interesting thought, Darnell. What should be done about something like that? What do you think?
I mean, what should be done about it? All I can say is that if there's a way to entice us to violence, then through the media and through the pop culture, then there should be a way to reverse that effect. So, I mean, I'm not a psychologist on how to actually do it, other than, you know, put more positive light. You know,
yeah.
talk to the people who are idols of the youth, and you know, maybe try to convince them to change their lyrics or, you know, something to where it's positive and peace, not just crime and violence.
It's such a good call, such a good first call for us to get. Wick Thomas from the library, you're closest in age to someone like Darnell. Does he have a good point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the teens I work with do internalize that message or that image that's like thrust upon them. I think, though, that something that has been that I've seen is, though there are a lot of like strong black role models like coming up in the pop scene. I think Janelle Monáe, who's from Kansas City, is one of the most wonderful. She's been really involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. Her and Wonderland Records and Jadena and everyone on Wonderland is like are just doing amazing things. And I think exposing young people to more artists like that, I think, is super helpful just because those are amazing people. Those are amazing idols for all young people, mm-hmm. I mean, the work they're doing.
Right.
Well,
yeah,
Dart-
it's definitely a start. I think it's definitely a start. I do notice that that there is some positive, you know, when you listen to the lyrics, there are some positive, you know, quotes here and there. I mean, I do see what you're saying. I think it is a great start. But if we can just stay consistent with it, you know, I mean, because a lot of years have been invested in, you know, in making it to what the outcome is now. So
right.
I think it's going to take a few years to reverse it.
Right. You know? Darnell, I'm sure glad you called and good luck. Okay.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Let me get another call here before a break. Cliff from Kansas City, Missouri. Cliff, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about the mayor's anti-violence task force. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to bring up an article that I read by Elijah Anderson. He is a black sociologist. He is also a teacher at Yale. And in 1994, he wrote an article called The Code of the Streets. And it's on the internet. You can Google it. And he talks about the inner city street community, which are the ones who get involved in the violence. That's what he calls them in the article, versus the decent folk that live in the inner city. And that they have the street community has a code of aggression and even to the point of murder. If that's what they need to do to defend their respect and their street cred, they call it street cred. And if that factor is ignored, then that's going to be very difficult to. I don't think it should be ignored, is what I'm saying. So I'd recommend if people read that article, it's on the internet, The Code of the Streets by Elijah Anderson.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that, Cliff. That's just an excellent suggestion. And, you know, I hear him say that, and I think that comment is just spot on. There's a culture out there that's awfully difficult for people like me to sort of connect with, but it's real, it exists, and I don't know how you get at that. Jolie?
Well, one of the things that is exciting about a lot of the programs that we already have in place in Kansas City is that we are addressing every issue as it relates to violence. And we've got two amazing programs right now in Kansas City, both Aim for Peace and Casey Nova. And they both take
the
different
no
approaches.
Violence Alliance is
right.
what it's
and,
known
and
as.
And Casey yeah. Nova, the No Violence Alliance, is a focused deterrent. So it's very much law enforcement related, but it is front lines working on exactly some of the issues that Cliff just brought up. On the other side, we've got Aim for Peace, which takes the interrupter model, mm-hmm. which we are sending individuals into the community who, you know, live in the neighborhoods where the vast majority of the violence is taking place and trying to stop and interrupt the violence and the retaliatory violence that takes place. We've got some really good programs that are addressing these very issues. Part of what we want to do as this task force is figure out what they are doing right now that works,
yeah.
where they could use help, and how we can connect the dots between the two organizations and make sure they're both successful and get what they need to keep moving forward.
The cut of the streets. Are you familiar with that, Wick?
Well, I mean, I think that just how we're talking about this, I think is something that is important to say is just that this isn't just a black issue. Or this, you know, like we've been, you know, like some of the wording that's been used, like, you know, versus the decent people who aren't involved in violence. Like, it's decent people who are involved in this violence, too. You know, mm-hmm. like, I have, you know, I've committed crimes in my past, and I wouldn't want someone to judge me now based on something I did as a teenager.
Right.
And so I think that it's kind of passing the buck a little bit to say that it's about the code of the streets. I mean, I think that is part of it for sure, but it's also about us. It's about everybody who's in this city, like, getting involved. It's not just about one specific particular group.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that you just said that, Wick, because you got to it before I could. But also, I just wanted to remind everybody that we're talking about all types of violence. And so the charge is, I mean, everything from domestic violence to child abuse. And there's no geographic location or limitation on any of these horrible things that happen. And so sometimes because of the homicides that are related to gun violence that are happening, and that's what's on the front paper, that's what we tend to think about. But we are charged with talking about violence or figuring out solutions for every type of violence, which is a huge task.
Yeah.
But that is what we're working on.
Let's go back to some calls that are lining up here. Joe from Midtown. Joe, you're on the program.
Yes, I think one of the causes for actually some of the homicides and violence in the Kansas City starts from anger in the home. And most recently, I talked to a young man who wanted to enroll at a local community college, but his father wouldn't give him this Social Security number. And I think several days ago, or maybe the day before yesterday, a young man was killed in Lee Summit because I think his father, it was rumored that his father wouldn't let him drive a car until he got his insurance. So when we talk about domestic violence, I'm wondering if we could start interviewing some of the people who have committed crimes and get to some of the causes as to why they did it. Now, that may be confessing, but I think until we deal with the anger in the home, which can lead to many things, violence on the street, I don't know how we're going to solve some of the things that are violent on the streets.
Yeah, good thoughts, Joe. I appreciate that. Thanks very, very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Philip from Midtown. Philip, good morning.
Hi there. Having had a great deal of experience in representing criminal defendants, I've got a couple of thoughts I'd like to share. The first is that some things are counterintuitive. The fact of the matter is, long term, we are safer if we lock up fewer people and manufacture fewer felons, because then people have alternatives to a bad lifestyle. And we just need to examine that.
I'm not sure I'm tracking that, Philip. Try me again on that.
Okay, here's the deal. We lock up too many people over too many trivial things, like drug offenses, okay?
Right.
And we impact their ability to have a future, to obtain jobs, to obtain education. All of that long-term is a terrible impact on our society.
Right.
That's number one. Number two, one of the things which can be done immediately is all of these folks who say they're opposed to gun violence, if they've got a young man living in their home and there's a gun, they need to get rid of it. because literally it's really hard to have gun violence if you don't have guns. And when people say to me, oh gosh, you know, I need to have a gun because I couldn't go to such and such a place without a gun, the answer to that is don't go there. What you need to do is not have guns, and that will cut down on gun violence.
All right. Philip, I appreciate that.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Leslie tweeted us this, heard a lot about poverty and jobs. Let's do more to get tech training opportunities and tech jobs across the truce divide. Okay. 816-235-2888 is our number. We're talking about the mayor's anti-violence task force. Councilman Justice, you just ended, as you mentioned, a career in the Missouri State House, the State Senate to be specific. You know as well as anyone just how conservative the General Assembly is these days. Mayor James talks often and forcefully about the need for stiffer gun control regulations in this town. You know, and yet he knows that lawmakers in the state capitol are highly unlikely to give those laws to him. If that's off the table, how effective can you all be?
Well, first of all, I don't think that it's totally off the table, because one of the things that we want to be doing is we want to find out from our local law enforcement, are there things that we could do on a local level? Are there asks we could make at the state level that are pragmatic approaches that would reduce some of the gun violence or some of the gun illegal guns in our community? Mm-hmm. So let's first figure that out. You know, one of the things that I read recently was that one of the best ways for us to combat as a nation gun crime in this country is by research and data. And as you probably know, we actually for decades now have not been able to do significant amounts of gun research in this country, frankly, because of a federal law and an amendment to some gun laws on the federal level that basically bans CDC funding for the public health outcomes as it relates to gun violence.
Wow. Wow.
That is something that I think is a horrible unintended consequence from some gun laws that came out of, frankly, when Brady and the others were working on gun regulation on the national level. Recently, I heard a report from the senator or congressman in Arkansas who was responsible for that amendment, and he expressed tremendous regret for offering that amendment because he feels like this is a public health issue, and until we get the data to combat some of this, we're not going to be able to address the issues. So what we need to do is collaborate with those folks either at the library, at UMKC, and others who can give us some hard data, and then we need to go down to Jefferson City or Washington, D.C. if necessary, and say, are there certain things we can do to keep the wrong guns out of the wrong hands?
Are there things you can do here locally, Councilwoman? I'm thinking about one of our listeners has written in about a gun buyback program that you could stage here locally without any approval from the General Assembly. Are there local options?
Yeah, I think there are. There are local options that some of them will get the spotlight or will go under the microscope when it comes to Jefferson City. Oftentimes when we try to do something locally, there is that preemption issue that pops up and you have the legislature that tries to fight back. Last week, I went down to Jefferson City to participate in the debate on the earnings tax. And it was interesting because the mayor had been told, you are going down there to protect our earnings tax and do not start lecturing them about guns. The mayor of St. Louis jumped right in, though, and he said, you know, part of the reason that the earnings tax is so vitally important to St. Louis and Kansas City is that the reckless gun policy, the reckless public health and access to health care and mental health care policies that our state has had has left our cities to clean up a lot of messes. And so I do believe that it's incredibly important that we continue to have those conversations because there are things that we can do locally, but we need to do it in such a way that they don't try to preempt what we do.
You see a lot of your old buddies down there?
I saw a lot of them, yes.
Yeah, that's great. Back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Brad from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, so I guess I have kind of a comment. I'm in prison ministry where I go in and meet with inmates, women and men, in Johnson County. And there's a need for that. And there's also, I think, a really dire need to help mentor and disciple guys that are coming out of jail and prison. For instance, Catholic Charities has a waiting list of ex-felons that need someone to, in the faith community, say disciple or mentor, but walk with them, help them procure employment, you know, navigate technology and transportation, and there's just a huge need for that. And, you know, if those guys don't get help and gals, then, you know, recidivism is a big problem as well.
So there's room for folks like members of Tina's church to sort of weigh in here and help out.
Absolutely. There is literally a waiting list of people that want to be mentored that can't get matched because there's not people there to do it. In the inner city especially, you've got churches on every corner almost. So I think people of faith should really step up and be there to disciple or mentor either people currently in jail and prison and those coming out.
Yeah. Brad, thanks for the call.
That could also start with big brothers, big sisters, mm-hmm. and work with the youngsters before they turn to a life of crime.
Yeah. Thank you, Brad. And Reverend Tina Harris, I'm wondering about what you see out there when it comes to potential for members of your congregation and many other congregations as well.
Well, Steve, that's exactly, I completely agree with Brad. Most of my people, I would say probably 70% of my folks have spent time in jail. And so they need some opportunities and some hope, really, when they get out of jail. And so I agree that he is right on, that we have to make sure that we're giving opportunities to people who are fresh out of prison. Father Greg Boyle, who is a gang prevention specialist out in California, he runs Homeboy Industries. He says that nothing stops a bullet faster than a job. And I completely agree with that. And I think that, I think it was Leslie who called in or wrote in and said something about that we have to give more job opportunities. And I think that would make a huge difference, particularly for those who've done time.
Yeah. I'm just wondering something I think Councilwoman Justice mentioned earlier in our program, this sense that the city's reputation for violence is holding us back. To what extent do you think that's the case, Wick, because it's certainly no longer a secret that we've got a crime rate around here that's sky high.
Well, I do think that I think that is definitely holding us back. I mean, I think it's holding us back in the lives that it affects, you know, that are taken out of this possibility of moving the city forward. I think it also affects, you know, people's how they see Kansas City and what that allows us to do on a national scale. I think it's definitely holding us back that we have that reputation.
Councilwoman, you see the same thing?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at business development, economic development, and increasing population density in the urban core, one of the big things that people talk about is, yes, but your crime rate. I hear usually once a week or more from a constituent who said, well, I'm moving back to the suburb, or I'm moving back to, to the Kansas side or something like this because I no longer feel safe in my community.
Right.
And the reality is that if we want to continue as a community to respect and leverage all of the great things that we have, we need a community that feels safe and comfortable. And that is across the city.
Right.
And I agree with Wick that in addition to that sense, we also have to focus on every life that we lose is a lost opportunity. And it impacts tenfold as it fluctuates through the community. So we need to be very, very, I think, cognizant of that and focus on that issue.
Robert from Kansas City, Missouri, wants to talk about jobs. Robert, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. This is just a short comment because I know you're short on time. I feel as though that the inner city, it gets a really hard, I forgive me, it really gets a hard time. Jobs need to be implemented into the city. That would cut down on a lot of violence. There's a lot of hungry people here in the inner city that don't have jobs or have transportations to get to jobs. And I think as far as our lawmakers are concerned, they need to look at those things. And I think that will cut down on a lot of violence because people would have jobs. Their minds would be somewhere else. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
There are things that there are small things that can be done to make the big things not so big anymore, if that makes any sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And inner city jobs, Jolie, in just 15 seconds, it's a tough nut to crack.
You know, it is, but we would be foolish to not look at this issue. And I agree with Tina and that we really need to make these opportunities available throughout our entire city. And that's one of the huge focuses that we will have with this task force.
Okay. I want to thank our members of the task force who joined me here this morning. Councilwoman Jolie Justice, who heads it up, Wick Thomas, teen librarian at the Plaza Library, Tina Harris, a pastor at Grand Avenue Temple United Methodist Church on 9th Street, and again, the website kcmo.gov/violence to get more information about this group and to tune into what they're doing. Good luck with your work. We'll be watching closely. Come back and visit again sometime soon, okay?
Thanks
for having us.
All right.